Hello, a very, very warm welcome to the Gita Decoded. We are now covering chapter 18. We've done one episode in chapter 18 thus far, and this is the second episode. And because it's the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we are going through every single shloka so that you, the viewer, can understand what is contained therein, not just the words, but from the view of a yogi who has been steeping herself in a spiritual practice for many decades. Sister Denise, very, very warm welcome to you once again. It's always great having you with us.
Thank you.
Sister Denise, we stopped at the end of the last episode in, I think it was verse 10, so now we will take up verse 11, which reads, "Indeed, embodied beings are not able to abandon actions entirely. He, then, who abandons the fruit of actions is called a man of renunciation." Could you please explain what is meant by the words in verse 11?
One thing that I think is particularly relevant here, you know, in Brahma Kumari's studies of Raj Yoga, in our teachings that we receive from Shiv Baba through the medium of Brahma Baba, it is very clearly stated that karma sannyas is not possible. So karma sannyas is the renunciation of action, because even if you're breathing, that's still karma. If you're drinking a glass of water, that's still karma. If you're walking along, it's still karma. So action, any action is karma. So as long as you're embodied, you are performing action. If you're in nirvana and you're not embodied, then only you can have a renunciation of action. So it's very interesting that God is clarifying that here. So he says, the only thing you can do is to renounce the fruit of action. And that means you can't actually even renounce the fruit of action, but you renounce your desire, your expectation, and your motivation to do actions because of an anticipated fruit. So this is a very refined, clear definition of renunciation. So if a person wants to really be a good Raj Yogi, this verse is going to help the person to evaluate your motivation, why you're doing what you're doing, and are you really doing the action purely in that most sattvic state of intention.
So it asks you to look at your motives.
It does.
Yeah, so Sister Denise, somebody who engages in spiritual practice and it takes this very seriously has to be introspective, mustn't he?
Yes.
Because none of the answers to the questions that you're asking can come to you if you're outward looking. You have to look inside,
yes.
And not just once, continuously.
And so the main thing is one has to renounce materialism, the materialistic orientation, and really become spiritually inclined, spiritually oriented, and come from the inside, going into the outside and then returning to the inside. So being internalized is your ground of being.
Okay, verse 12 reads, "The fruit of action for those who have not renounced when they depart, die, in brackets, is threefold, evil, good, and mixed. But for the renouncers, there is none whatever." I didn't understand that, Sister Denise, because I thought one who renounces receives good karma. So could you explain that, please? When he uses the word renounces, he means a renunciate, doesn't he? Because that's not a word, renouncer.
Well, it's the people who take the position of karma sannyas, but it's in contradiction to what was said earlier, that you actually cannot renounce. So the principle behind the concept of karma sannyas is that you can renounce. And if you can renounce action, then anyway, there's not going to be any fruit because you didn't do anything anyway. But the first part of the stanza speaks about those who have not renounced. And here I would say that we're referring to a person who has not renounced the fruit of action. And if you say, okay, I am practicing to renounce the fruit of action, even then, when you die, you will get a good fruit, but you might not get it right away. And if you've done a negative karma, you will get bad fruit. And then mixed is for all the areas in between the two ends of the spectrum. So you could read this verse as referring to somebody who is trying to renounce the fruit of action. But the philosophy of karma says no matter what, you will get the fruit.
It's like once you performed an action, you cannot escape the fruit, can you?
That's right.
Sister Denise, let's now go to verse number 13. Learn from me, O Arjuna, capital M, these five factors declared in the Sankhya doctrine for the accomplishment of all actions, which reads at verse 14, the seat of action, in brackets the body, the doer, the various organs and the various separate activities with the presiding deities as the fifth. That's quite a mouthful, Sister Denise. Could you share what is meant by this?
You see, when it comes to the Sankhya doctrine, you're talking about the yoga of knowledge, all the details, but you're also back into the Vedas, very specifically into the Vedas. And so this is where you have the description of the presiding deities. So a person who is involved in the practice of Hinduism according to the Vedas would be very conscious of all the rules and regulations about different ritual actions. And so this is really referring to that. And I think that we probably would not go into it because in our series, we are looking at the Gita knowledge, but we aren't really looking at the Vedic knowledge. And I think this really does apply to the Vedic knowledge specifically.
Okay, then Sister Denise, in light of what you just said, I'm going to skip a few verses. Let us now go to verse number 17. He whose state of mind is not egoistic, I think there comes your humility answer here, whose intellect is not tainted, even though he slays these people, he does not slay and is not bound by his actions. I take it that God is referring to the war again. Okay, and is taking Arjuna back because that is the reason for the entire conversation in the first place. But what would you say the rest of the verse means?
I think it's quite good to focus on this word egoistic. And he talks about the state of mind, which is the sthiti. There are different levels of consciousness. The sthiti, then the intellect. He speaks of an untainted intellect. So the intellect could be sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. So if the intellect is rajasic or tamasic, then it's tainted. If the intellect is untainted, the intellect is pure. So the intellect is not using any devices to justify. So not egoistic means that you are not claiming the arrogance of I did this or I am doing this. When the intellect is pure and the mind is free from this attitude that the consciousness of I, we talk about this in Brahma Kumaris, the consciousness of I and mine, I did this, this is mine, I will take the fruits. And in the previous shlokas, it was also talking about that if you think that you are the one who did the action, it means you haven't understood. So it is a very, very subtle type of consciousness required that I perform actions in the remembrance of God, and therefore the action is surrendered to God, which implies I will not claim the fruit, I will not claim that I did it, I will not claim the recompense, the adulation, or whatever for doing a pure action. So in the third line, even though he slays these people, it says he does not slay. This is a very, very tricky shloka to deal with because of the act of killing. And if you are in the military, and of course here Arjuna is performing a military function of slaying the people, first of all, he has to be completely away from the thought that these are my relatives, because he doesn't mind slaying as long as they're not his relatives. And then I think what God is saying is, look, you know, these people, you need to not think of them as your relatives. That's one level. You need to understand they're already dead. That's another level. And this whole thing repeats identically. So you're just going through the motions of something that is destined. And in another area, he says, Arjuna, you are destined to have a very high destiny, so that this act that you are classifying as a negative action cannot be a negative action because of the fact that you are doing it in obedience to the instructions of God, and this is what changes the quality of the action. And so this is quite a difficult shloka to apply practically, because people will feel, well, you know, how do I know God is telling me to do this? And you may be aware, in the court system, there may be criminals who say, well, you know, I was inspired to kill this person by God. And then you will send him for psychiatric assessment. So you see how awkward this is.
Yeah. Yes, a number of questions are raised as a result of reading that. Sister Denise, on that note, is Arjuna called upon in the scene in which he finds himself, is he called upon to kill something or someone or many ones?
It's an interesting question, because you can't kill someone, because the person, the being, is immortal. And so the body is a thing, and so you can kill a thing, but then it's not immoral to destroy an object. So the whole difficulty of whether a person, you know, is a body or a soul, or what that's all about, is all of this is brought under question. And so that has to be meditated upon deeply, because you see, if we are moral people, we're not going to abandon our morals that easily. And you can see how Arjuna is sticking to his guns no matter what. And although we're almost at the end of the Gita, it's still going.
Yeah, and the fact that God is still giving him the message at the end, it means that he knows that his son is somewhat unconvinced.
That's right.
Yes. So let's go on to verse 18. Knowledge, the process of knowing, and the knower are the threefold impulse to action. The instrument, the action, and the doer are the threefold basis of action. That's very poetic, but not easy for the Western intellect to necessarily understand what it means. And Sister Denise, verse 19 is the continuation of the same thought, which reads, it is declared in Sankhya that knowledge, action, and the doer are the three kinds distinguished according to the qualities. And then he goes on further to describe what that is in verses 20 onwards.
Let's do this step by step. So first of all, you've got the three things: knowledge, So you have information about good, neutral and negative actions. So you have that. Then the process of knowing has to do with your power of discrimination, your conscience, your perception, and so on. And then yourself, you see. So it means that when you're introspecting and you're trying to evaluate who you are and what you're doing and why you're doing it, it gives us quite an interesting angle from which to approach this. And he calls this, each one is an impulse to action. And so potentially the process of knowing can come in conflict with knowing. And then again with you. So you need to have all the three lined up before you can go ahead and do an action. And so it is really asking us some very fine tuning here.
Okay, Sister Denise, the answer is given from verse 20 onwards, and I'll read it verse by verse. That knowledge by which one sees one imperishable being, capital B, in all beings, small b, undivided in separate beings, knowing that knowledge to be sattvic.
Yeah, that's a preceded by verse 19, which says that this description is Sankhya. Mm. Sankhya gives the idea that everything is one thing, you know. So you have the idea of Advaita, where everything is one, which implies the idea of the omnipresence of God. So you see, earlier we saw that Sankhya says that, you know, God divides himself up into little fragments, of which each fragment is someone. So if you see the fragment, you're not seeing the whole, so you're missing something. And I think that what we would say in the Raj Yoga of Brahma Kumaris is that we would not actually consider this to be sattvic way to look at action, but slightly differently. And what we would say is this, that you perform actions in remembrance of God because you want to have your karma with God. And then you're not looking at the person with whom you're interacting, but rather you're looking at the directions, the description of pure action that you're getting from God, doing it as an act under the direction of God. So you want to make a pure action, and the person that you're interacting with is not so important as what you're doing and why you're doing it. We would rather look at it that way.
Verse 21, but that knowledge which sees in all beings separate entities of various kinds by differentiation, know that knowledge to be rajasic.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think this description of action, rajasic action, according to the Sankhya system, if you look at it from the system of Raj Yoga that we practice in Brahma Kumaris, we would see, well, yeah, you do need to be aware that there are different people of different types and so on. But that doesn't impact your motive. So the position that we have is actually a little different from these descriptions of sattva, rajasic and tamasic action. So it's interesting to see that difference.
And Sister Denise, I would now like to go on to verse 22, that in brackets knowledge, however, which is attached to one single effect as if it were all and without reason, without a real purpose and small in significance, is declared to be tamasic. And I thought of watching television and whether it falls into this category, because it has become an international favorite pastime. I just wondered whether that will fall into this category. But what is your take on this?
Well, watching television, there's many different types of programming.
That is true.
And so what you're watching, why you're watching it, for how long you're watching it, and are you watching it to just relax? Are you watching it to gain information? Are you watching it for educational purposes? Is it entertainment? Is it cultural? Is it indulgence? Is it, you know, I mean, there's so many things.
But Sister Denise, the interesting thing about watching television, and this is why I raised it, is because it becomes second nature to a lot of people. It's now common for people to come home and the first thing they do is, apart from putting your bag down on the floor or on near the nearest table, to grab the remote and do that. Okay, and above and beyond that, not ask yourself, why am I watching television? It's there, I'm watching it. You see, so it's become such a deeply entrenched habit, but it's something that I thought of in this context. But setting aside the television issue.
No, I think what you've raised is a very important point, because what you're talking about is television as an addiction.
Yeah.
And an addiction is there when the person is weak, and it makes the person weaker. You see, if you arrive at home and there's nothing happening and you have to get used to the silence, find yourself, decide what you're going to do now, it requires some energy, it requires some focused thought. If you just automatically turn on the TV, you're not living, you know?
Oh, wow, Sister Denise, there are millions then who are, by virtue of your definition, not living.
Not living, like not consciously living, you know?
Yes, let's take that subject up later, because it's I've got 1,000 questions on it, but let's take it up later. What is your understanding of verse 22 without my television example?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, people are very often doing things for petty reasons, as if that's the only thing in the world. They don't have things in perspective. And yes, definitely here we can say tamasic is referring to something like really small-minded, petty, ordinary, and that is not how we need to be doing things.
Next question that I have is a very long one for you, but I think we'll stop here because we won't have time between now and the end of this episode. So there you have it. The three gunas have come in again, and God is asking Arjuna to look at our actions, to scrutinize our behavior on such a level that we are aware of the consequences of what we're doing, and not just performing the action, but look at the outcome.
I think it's even more than the outcome. We're really looking at what, you know, are we acting from a place of greatness or pettiness, or, you know, our attitude is actually coming into this quite importantly, and asking the question, you know, because it's calling it sato, rajo and tamo action, what kind of person are you? This question is again and again being asked.
Thank you, Sister Denise. What kind of person are you? So, wow. Okay. I hope that we can highlight that question and put it on the screen with graphics and maybe some fireworks at the back, so that you can receive that message. That is a very powerful note, Sister Denise, on which you ended today's episode. What kind of person are you? Yeah. And, you know, when one looks at the Bhagavad Gita from the word go until chapter 18, Arjuna was already everything that he was destined to be. But when God met him, he realized that his son was more than what he'd become. And so God's brought out the best in Arjuna by the conversation that ensued between the two of them. So the question Sister Denise leaves us with is not just what type of person you have become, but what type of person would you like to be? I think that's another question. and one that we do not ask ourselves often. So there you go. I hope that you have received the message that is contained in this chapter, and I hope Sister Denise's clarity and wisdom has been of some insight and has been of some value to you, so that you could use it to enrich your own life. I really hope that that is the case for you. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you for the next episode. Take care and goodbye.